and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks. I'm thrilled you're going to join us today. We are going to be celebrating 25 years of supporting families and caregivers through the Normandale Center for Healing and Wholeness. We're going to hear their story today, and I'm really excited to be able to bring this to you. They're just doing great, great work here in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. We're not only going to hear from their executive director, but we are going to hear from their caregiver specialist and a care partner, and then two people living with dementia as well, and how their program has really assisted them. But before I introduce you to all of our guests today, I'd like to do a couple of shout outs. So, and one is to the organization called Twiddle. And if you haven't heard of them, they make really cool sensory aids that help people, especially during sundowning, how it can reduce the stress, not for just those living with dementia, but also their care partners. They also make a clothing piece called Adaptive Wrap, where sometimes things can get real combative when we're trying to put something over the head. And this alleviates all of that. So go to their website, which is the number 4 and then twiddlesplural.com. I also want to shout out to Lorenzo's House because they are doing their annual youth summit, which is going to be held June 14th and 15th. It's free. So go to lorenzoshouse.org for more information. And of course, I always do a couple of support groups every month. One is virtual, the other is in person here in Shoreview. If you're interested in either of those, please reach out to me. And then two last things. I always encourage people to go visit Dementia Map, our global resource directory, and you are invited to participate in that. We are not going to be asked for any personal information unless, of course, you want to participate in being a resource, and we need to have some information from you to be able to connect you to others in need. And then also Alzheimer's Speaks. If you go to my main website, you will also find a bunch of free educational resources there. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and introduce you to our panel today. Well, I am so excited to have this conversation. It seems like we talked ages ago about getting this set up and the time has arrived. I am really excited about this show because this organization is really right in my backyard. And yet there's a lot I didn't know about it. So I know there's a lot that my listeners don't know either that we want to share. So I'm going to go to Jennifer first and just have everybody introduce themselves. And Jennifer, if you don't mind kicking us off, you know, mentioning your company name and then a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Lori. Thanks for having us. I'm Jennifer Monroe. I'm the executive director of the Normandale Center for Healing and Wholeness, and we're a nonprofit that's been in existence for 25 years. Our 25th anniversary is next year. And we provide educational programming and workshops, counseling and supportive services for caregivers. So the majority of the folks that we support are caring for somebody with Alzheimer's or related dementias. And so that's kind of our field of specialty. I have a personal connection in addition to my professional work of both my father and my uncle and my grandmother had Alzheimer's. I lost my dad 7 years ago.
Becky, how about you?
Sure. My name is Becky Zinn Caulfield. I'm a social worker and caregiver specialist here at the Normandale Center. I've been here just a couple of years, but have been a social worker for many years and have really enjoyed working with the geriatric population. And I do have a personal connection as well of both my grandmothers. an uncle, and now my mom has been diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. And Lee, how about you? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Well, I'm a longtime member of Normandale and just feel so blessed to be here with at the center. They certainly are meeting my needs. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. Oh, you can tell I'm not used to doing this. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's many years ago, and now I have been diagnosed with dementia. It's sometimes it's very evident, as was just the case, and sometimes it isn't. I never quite know, but I'm learning so much what's available. I don't feel alone. I feel I have much support. I can't say enough good about the Normandale Center. I'm very grateful for it and for the people here.
Great, thank you. And Ken and Mary Margaret. Ken, do you want to go first and introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Ken Lehman. I'm 87 years old, and I was diagnosed probably 13 or 14 years ago, and I have all the biomarkers and everything that is associated with Alzheimer's, but for some reason I have not declined, and so I have been studied by quite a few different doctors as to why I have all the biomarkers, but I have not declined, and they really don't know. So I'm here to support other people because I can.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ken. So you are a unicorn out there, and that's wonderful. My own mom lived with dementia for 30 years, so I understand how things can not progress or slowly progress over the years, and people kind of look at you sideways sometimes, like how can that happen to you and not to my loved ones? So I appreciate that you are willing to be studied and advocate for yourself and others. Mary Margaret, why don't you introduce yourself?
I am Mary Margaret Lehman. I am a wife, a daughter, a mother, a grandmother, a sister, a friend. I was a speech therapist. I was a reading consultant and a adjunct professor at UCLA teaching teachers how to teach reading. And I was just about to retire when I began to notice more and more changes in Ken on a day-by-day basis. He was having difficulty at work learning a new computer program. We were having some difficulty with our financial situation. And as a result, we started seeing doctors. And we actually saw nine doctors in California and here in Minneapolis before Ken was finally diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He is nothing like my dad was, nor my uncle was, nor his dad, but he has his own unique diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and it's been amazing. Truly amazing to walk beside him and see him make a difference in others' lives as a result.
Wonderful, thank you. It's so nice to get people together that have these variety of stories and what they're doing, with that information and how each of you has been touched. So I really appreciate you coming in as a panel to have this discussion. Jennifer, I'm going to go to you first. Do you want to share a little bit about the Normandale Center for Healing and Wholeness and how did it get started, and how are you serving people with dementia?
I'd be happy to. We were started through a coalition of a number of large organizations in the Twin Cities, including Fairview Health Services, Lutheran Brotherhood, and Lutheran Social Services. but spearheaded through Normandale Lutheran Church. And again, as I mentioned, it's about 24 years ago that this all happened. And we started as a ministry to support people in the community and then incorporated as a nonprofit in 2000. And since that time, I was thinking about how many people we've served, looking at prior numbers. And I think we've served 10,000 people in the past 24 years, served between 400 and 500 individuals a year. And again, caregivers that are supporting someone in their life, a spouse, a parent, a friend, a neighbor, informal, unpaid, you know, and family caregivers. And really the crux of what we do is bring people together. People share their stories and information and resources. One of our most popular services is our support groups. We have four support groups right now and a memory cafe. And they're just increasing. Just, you know, we have a drop in on the second Saturday of every month, and it's just growing. We're seeing more and more people dropping in and just looking for that opportunity to talk about their experience and share with one another. And so that's, we do a number of group things related to that, education support groups, but we have social work services that provide individual and one-on-one family meetings, a lot of educational workshops. We also offer respite, which is, we started offering programming early on and people were having difficulty attending because they were, you know, caregiving as a 24-hour job. And it was difficult to find resources and adequate supports to care for the family member. And so we started utilizing volunteers and training them, putting them through our program and also a training program through the Alzheimer's Association to help provide respite so that caregivers could come in and participate in services, education or support groups. And then there would be a group of with activities and led by a staff person, volunteer coordinators and volunteers to keep the family member engaged so that everybody is having an opportunity to share and learn from one another and hopefully have a positive experience and just all be together with, be able to say whatever people want to say and talk about what's going on in their lives. So I think that's one of the strongest things that we offer. And as far as more detail on social work services, Becky is our specialist, and she could probably speak a little bit more about what she does with individuals and families regarding supportive services for that.
Great. Becky, you want to tell us a little more?
Sure. I meet with caregivers and or families, depending on what they feel is needed. Sometimes those referrals come through the Alzheimer's Association. A lot of them are word of mouth. People learn from their friends that we are here as a resource. And as Jennifer said, we have really been booming lately. So caregivers will come in and I'll have them complete a caregiver assessment. And we sit down and talk through that and really look at their unique caregiving situation. And we'll identify the areas that they feel they need some help in, which really can run the gamut, as you can imagine. It could be anything from needing some in-home help to needing elder law services to hiring a housekeeper to looking at assisted living facilities, talking about advanced care planning. It really is all over the place. So we work through their individual situation and set them up with resources and then provide continuous follow-up as needed. And we'll meet again as needed to continue to support them along their journey. So and then I oversee the support groups too. As Jennifer said, we have, we're starting a second support group on our second Saturdays because we have overgrown our group. So I'm glad people are learning about us and coming out and getting the support that they need. And then also started the Memory Cafe in December of last year. And that has been going really well and people have been contacting me, wanting to attend. It's been great to see that happen. So,
hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, that's fantastic. As far as your support groups, are they mostly couples or individuals or adult children with parents, or great. Is it a little bit of everybody?
Yeah, great question. We aren't splitting the groups by couple or spousal caregivers, et cetera, at this point in time. So it's all of the above. We have a large majority are spouse, and then probably adult children would be the next category. There are even some sibling caregivers that come. So, yeah. And so many will come, of course, on their own. There are, perhaps a parent caregiver or spousal caregiver where the adult children come with them. As Jennifer said, too, we have the respite so that otherwise some people wouldn't be able to attend at all. So,
yeah, that's how I do my groups too. I don't break them apart because I think there's more overlap than not.
Which sure.
It's good to see everybody's situation because we can still learn from one.
Absolutely. And we have two virtual support groups. Those, based on the timings, I would say a fair amount of those are maybe more adult children just because of the timing, and perhaps they can't come as easily on a weekend, whereas the spousal caregivers are perhaps more available to come on the weekend.
Okay.
One thing I would say about the center that makes us unique as well is we, all of our revenue comes from grants and contributions, individuals who do, we ask people who, do want to contribute are certainly welcome, but there's no charge for anything that we offer. So primarily our goal is to provide supportive services for those who may not have somewhere else to go to participate in a support group or attend an evidence-based or educational class. And so that's unique as well. So we don't turn anybody away for inability to contribute or anything to any of our services. So.
And that's so critical in this day and age. People are really struggling financially, and the last thing you want is to have that burden of, where's your cash, before you can learn or get connected and supported. I just think that is a critical, critical piece. So thank you for structuring, all of your support services in that manner. Mm-hmm. Ken, I want to go to you next, if that's okay. I want to know, during COVID, when we were all kind of stuck in our houses and really weren't able to communicate, how critical was it for you to still be able to connect in some fashion?
You've talked a lot about caregivers, but no one has talked about giving service to the person that has Alzheimer's. And I think that is really needed. After COVID, there were many programs, or I should say before COVID, there were many programs for the person who has Alzheimer's and their loved one, whoever. And we would go to the Arts Center and do things. We had the Northern Clay Center come and do things. We had a drum contest, all these different things that were geared for the person with Alzheimer's. And I think one of the regrets is that we're just getting put in a closet, those people that are really need some other type of activity, sitting around doing nothing doesn't really help the brain in any way whatsoever. So I would like to see some support groups for just the person with Alzheimer's.
I agree. I think that's a huge, huge need out there. And for me and my situation, I'll just put in my two cents with that is, my mom lived with dementia for 30 years, and I kind of stepped into this world as a disgruntled care partner to my mother and daughter, going, where are all the services, products, and tools, not just for us, but for especially people with dementia, and why isn't their voice being heard? Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things I love about this show, is because people with dementia are more than welcome to join us on this show. We do open mic once a month. Anybody can call in. And then we also have dementia chats, where I interview people on a monthly basis, and that's totally mm-hmm. virtual. And the panel of people living with dementia, they decide the topic. I just record it and push it out, you know, because I think the value in their voice and insights is absolutely critical. We also have just started a art program, Dementia in the Art, not where we teach art, but where we highlight people's art that are living with dementia. And so those are available. And, you know, anybody can duplicate any of those things as well, because, you know, none of us can cover the need for the number of people. This is a global situation, and we need as many of us to work together. So thank you for bringing that point up. I think it's extremely important. There are a couple of organizations that focus just specifically on raising the voice of people with dementia. One is Dementia Action Alliance, known as DAA, and you can reach them at DAA Now. The other group is Dementia Minds, and they do a lot of education from the speaker's aspect of a person with dementia as well, as does DAA. But there are so many organizations like Normandale and myself and others that are also supporting this and you know, evolving as things come up. And I think one of the things that is wonderful, Ken, about what you said is that we need to reach out to people like you and Leif that are living with dementia and hear your comments. Because if you don't speak up and tell us those are a need, we may not figure that out. You know, we need to be directed. You're living with it. You know it better than anyone else there. So thank you for stating that. Mary Margaret, I want to talk to you about COVID as well, and how it kind of that shrinking social circle affected you and Ken, you know, living with dementia in your journey and living life as a whole.
For sure. I as you describe it, I just have this image of our little world becoming just very small during that period of time. I remember walking out on our deck, and our family would call and say, "We're driving by, wave." So that would be a highlight of the day. But one of the most beautiful gifts that we experienced, and I experienced as an onlooker, but our grandson asked Ken if he and Ken could do genealogy together on Ken's family. And so they spent days, weeks, months, years, actually, researching all of the relatives that had come here. And what a gift it has been for our grandson, particularly because he now has a very, very strong idea of who he is. And he is now 17 and feeling very sure of himself. He knows all about his family, his past and present. And that was such a gift for Ken to give to him. And Dr. Rosenblum is our neurologist. And Ken, I took the writings that Ken did during that time to Dr. Rosenblum and showed them. And he also drew pictures and maps of where he lived as a child and where the farm was and what was on the farm and so forth. And so there was a visual attached to it as well. So our grandson really made a difference for us, for Ken particularly, for me, because my heart was full watching them do this together. But it was very difficult because we had quite a busy life. And I don't know that since then it has really returned to the many activities that we had. And was it about 6 months ago or so? I just began to really miss that connection. And I stopped by Normandale and I just felt as though I were home. And I hadn't met Becky before, but I was immediately welcomed and felt at home and seen as well, because so many of us who were not allowed to go out into the world, because not only because of Alzheimer's, but because of other circumstances revolving around the pandemic. It was like coming home. I'd never have told you that, Becky, but it was just, it was such a gift. And I've since re-upped my involvement at Normandale. And I was one of the 50 in a wonderful support group meeting a few Saturdays ago. And it's home. It's home where you can be yourself, and it's a gift.
That's fantastic. You know, one of the things, I don't think people understand the strain dementia can put on families emotionally, physically, financially, the whole nine yards with that. Can you explain, you know, how that affected you as a family on all of those different levels, Mary Margaret?
Wow. Our story is our story, our life. It isn't a story, it's real life. has been very challenging. My brilliant, wonderful husband notified the rest of us in the family that he had something else going on when he declared that we would have to go through bankruptcy. And I realized that some of our bills were not being paid, but I didn't know why, because this has always been his area. And he's been in charge and he's done a fantastic job for years and years. In December, we will have been married 62 years. So it's something that we have expected and I've depended on. But suddenly I was getting all kinds of notices that bills were not being paid, such as the garbage bill. And the reason was not something that I could accept, but it was a very, very difficult time. And we had to go to federal court and we were deemed to be in bankruptcy for 10 years. And just last year, we received a notice that we were out of bankruptcy. And we made it. We made it through, yes. So, of course, things have changed tremendously. We're on a very small budget, but we are making it. And there are just so many things in life that can circumvent that sadness and that part of our being right now. And I think one of the things that we enjoy doing so much together is planting a garden on our deck. And we're coming up on, well, this is April, so we're coming up in just a couple of weeks of going over to Bachman's and starting our garden again, which is such a life-giving experience. And Ken he's just such an artistic eye and just does a beautiful job in planting and taking care of the garden until the winter, early winter months. So that's something to look forward to as well. And one thing that we haven't talked about is the fact that he goes to woodworking every morning. Over at Edina High School, they have a...
Old Edina High School.
It needs to be stipulated. They have an old wood shop. And these fellows come from all around the...
And gals.
Yeah, that's true. They come from all around Minnesota, Minneapolis area, and they have a time to make anything they want. And Ken, in his purpose for making all of these beautiful, beautiful trays and what else would you call them? Trays.
Bread boxes.
He then donates them to the Alzheimer's Association, and they auction them off at their gala in May, so that it brings in some extra
money.
Yes, money, M-O-N-E-Y, money for the association. So that gives him a lot of purpose. I think he's made something for you, Becky.
He has, and I would show it, but I took it home. But here's an example. Of your artwork.
That's a card. We had cards made too of some of his woodworking, and so we're able to share those in a different respect. Mm-hmm. But we are just grateful. We have so much to be grateful for. And this is not the retirement that we expected. But, you know, you just re-evaluate where our lives are and what we can do to be the best we can and to help one another and continue to help ourselves in this world that's so... What is this world, Avi? It's an unpredictable world.
Well, you know what amazes me is just your outlook. And I'm sure it was hard not to go down the rabbit hole. I mean, when dementia hits, when, you know, catastrophe happens, it's really easy to go down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And you may have done that for a while, but you've pulled yourself out and realized there are blessings and joyful moments every day if you choose to look for them. But you'll only find them when you're looking for them. And
right.
You know, even when you mentioned Becky, you know, just going over there and meeting with her just lifted your heart, and you felt at home. Those are huge, huge things. And I think we have to help people look for the light and the good that's mm-hmm. around us, even during difficult times, because it is definitely there. I want to go to Leif next, because I'd like to hear from you, Leif, on how did you cope with getting a dementia diagnosis?
I was suspicious of that because I usually had a very good memory. And what I did was... talk about it, tell people, you know, I really don't think I'm remembering like I used to. Would you repeat that? I'd like to write that down. I just felt it was better to admit it, acknowledge it, at the same time being grateful for the memory I've had and memories I will still make. But I wanted others to know, instead of wondering whether or not she was remembering correctly or not. And that has worked. And people are very responsive to that. If I tell them I have a memory that I'm not sure, would you repeat that? They're happy to do that. And I carry a pad of paper with me and a pencil and note things. And we'll note that on my calendar. Calendars are wonderful, whether daily or monthly or whatever. And I just have a very empathetic family that is very helpful. I guess that's about it.
I love that you were open about it because so many people hide it. You know, they're really fearful of will they still be accepted and what's going on. But I think it's really smart to be able to do that. And I know everybody's situation is different. Ken, for you, how did you deal with it when you got diagnosed or even prior? You said you were going to like 9 different doctors. And it's not uncommon for a diagnosis to take, you know, 2 or 3 years to get for many people. Mm-hmm. Did you share with others or did you not even notice yourself? Sometimes people themselves don't notice, but others around them do.
He had a little hard time hearing you, but.
The question.
So the bottom question is.
I wanted to know if you noticed symptom changes within yourself and if you felt comfortable sharing those with others.
I don't feel any stages. It just seems like I'm in a state of flux, but not going anywhere.
Okay, wonderful. Mary Margaret, as a family, once you got the diagnosis, did you guys decide to tell family members and friends? Or I know you're doing advocacy now.
Oh, yes. Yes, when we lost our home in California, we had moved in with our daughter and family. And they were the ones who really encouraged us to get a diagnosis. So, yes, they were very much involved and helped us to realign our finances and so forth. So they were very involved, and our son was also very involved. And everybody knows, it's just no secret. I just don't like not telling people because this is our world now. And there are definitely those who would prefer not to be too close. It might be contagious, but it's just a matter of we are who we are and we do the best we can. And we just maneuver through life and just find our path that makes us feel whole. And welcome when the opportunity is there. I don't hold back at all. In fact, I have on a purple sweater today, and I often wear purple, and I often get comments on the fact that I'm wearing purple, and I'll say, "Oh, it's the Alzheimer's color," and they'll say, "Oh," and I always hear a story about someone in their family who has Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So it just opens the door and just makes it, it's just part of life. It's for many of us. And so it's nothing to be ashamed of. We are not only surviving, we are thriving. We are truly thriving. When Ken and I were first, when Ken and I were first diagnosed. When Ken was diagnosed, we had what we called the 5 D's. What were they, Lovey? Do you remember?
No.
We were depressed. We were, let's see, devastated. We had all of these negative D words. And we just embraced them. And said, "This is how we feel. Now what are we going to do?" And so we decided that we were going to make a difference. And that's why we became advocates. Because people didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to talk about it with us. And we said, we have to bring this out of the darkness. So the more we talk about it, the more it's going to be accepted. Because it's just part of life for many of us. So this is how we really decided to become advocates. And we've gone to Washington, D.C. 3 times and to different states and to the legislature in St. Paul many times. And we're just doing the best we can for all of us who are living with Alzheimer's, because it's not going to go away yet.
Well, and I like that you identified the 5 D's, even if you don't remember them all, you acknowledge those feelings and then you push through them.
Here they are. Here they are. Denial at first. Mm-hmm. Depressed, devastated, desperate. Mm-hmm. We were desperate. What are we going to do? And then the last one, I don't remember. I only wrote down 4 here, but there were 5. But yeah. But you know, just acknowledging, yeah, it's hard.
Well, if anyone is just tuning in, we are talking with the panel from the Normandale Center for Healing and Wholeness here in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And you can find out more by visiting their site at normandalecenter.org, or you can always email them at info@normandalecenter.org. And again, you can always call them as well, 952-929-1698. They are also on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. I am going to just give a shout out to QBlocks really quick. They are a webmaster that is phenomenal. And then we'll be right back. I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. They have been in business for 18 years and they serve the globe. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences, I don't know about you, with tech companies. They have made a very complicated process very easy. And their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And, you know, when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. You can get a 10% discount. Visit them at QBlocks, that's QBlocks.com, or you can email them at letstalk@qblocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, Lori, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days. And Becky, I want to know from you, what are some top things that you can support caregivers and their care partners?
Sure. You know, really, when I am doing my assessment, I want to look at, it's, to me, it's like a psychosocial assessment, especially as a social worker. and so I want to know, you know, financially, are they stable or is that an issue? From an emotional standpoint, how are they doing? And also from that mental standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, how are they doing? A social standpoint. And that's really both the caregiver and the care receiver. Taking this job was a little bit of a shift for me, having always been more patient focused in an acute care medical setting, and focusing more on the caregiver. So I always have that care receiver interest in mind as well, and it's important. But I like to look at all those aspects, and you know, we'll kind of evaluate where might they need the support more in some of those aspects than others. And then input those services or resources. Some people come in with, you know, a really strong support network and background and don't need as much support as others who may really be struggling, don't have family support or friend support, that type of thing. So it really is very individual. But that's why we do have our support groups. We have our memory cafe, the respite. We have memory companions to also go out and help provide both the companionship to the care receiver, as well as give that break to the caregiver. So it varies person to person as to what we do, but there's so many resources out there that, and if I, you know, even as Ken was saying, of looking for activities for somebody with dementia, that, you know, if I don't know of a resource, I'm going to research it and do what I can to find something.
Wonderful. Jennifer, anything you want to add?
No, just that a key thing we do is that finding, you know, helping people navigate and look for resources. So we're a pretty small organization. We have a handful of part-time staff, but a lot of volunteers. And a lot of what we do is help people find other resources and supportive services in the state or that, you know, in Minnesota, wherever they live, that can help them for what they need. And our approach is kind of action planning. So what is the most immediate need in that initial conversation and how can we address that? Maybe somebody's thinking about residential placement, or maybe someone is looking for, respite services or a day program. We help resource and give them multiple options to look at. So helping people, you know, action item by action item along the way to kind of tackle things as they come up, as, you know, things are constantly changing. And that's a key approach that we have as well. Just what is the most immediate need and how can we help you address what you need to feel better about that?
Wonderful. Now, Leif, you've been a lifelong member, it sounds like, out there. Was it just a natural for you to slide into some of their additional support services then once you got diagnosed?
Oh, very easy. And I, as I mentioned earlier, my husband with Parkinson's brought me into that realm. And then after he passed away and I was discovered to have the Alzheimer's set in for me, I thought, I want to do what I can to make it easier for my family. I want to be open about it, talk about it, because I have some friends who haven't been. And it's been really hard to talk with them and make, I'd like to make them feel more comfortable, and yet they just were so resistant about sharing what they had. And it's so much easier when people know what you're dealing with. The empathetic ability is so much easier that way too.
Oh, I totally agree. Now, do you still do other programs that you did prior to your diagnosis at Normandale as well?
Well, I have a group of wonderful friends that we do things with, maybe take a little trip or get together for an afternoon, or maybe have dinner, share dinner together. Somebody brings one thing, someone another. So, and I'm the facility I'm living in, Friendship Village, is very conducive to that. They have lots of things going on. So if you're not busy, it's my fault.
Yeah, they do have a lot of stuff going on over there. That's for sure. Go ahead, Mary Margaret.
I'm sorry that this is, it's not a tag along. It's very important to me. It's the center of my being, is my spiritual life. And this is our guiding light, is the spirituality that we both share. And unfortunately, our church is not really wanting or even willing to open their arms to learning more about Alzheimer's. Ken and I, actually, we had a different priest who invited us to share our story, and there were over 50 people who came, which I thought was quite a revelation for Episcopalians. Very serious. But that went very well, but I volunteered to speak at the convention, the statewide convention, and they thanked me very much, but no thank you. So it's still, there's still a ways to go. And I think it's so important because there are so many of us, and we're afraid to talk about it because it's so unacceptable in some circles. So I think we still have work to do. We are normal people who are living with Alzheimer's, whether we're caregivers or the person with the disease. And we want to make a difference in our world. And we do so by living as well as we can, by advocating, by going to our elected officials, but we would love to be able to share with our clerical officials as well, because it is part of life for more and more. So thank you.
Out there that are becoming dementia friendly, and they're actually doing special.
Yes, yes, absolutely. In fact, we had a support group at the Congregational Church in Minneapolis. Yes, there. Yes, yeah. Maybe I'm just talking about one denomination. I'm not sure.
It really varies. I know in Roseville, Roseville Lutheran tried really hard, but they couldn't get people to come. But again, you have to. Really let people know and almost do a kickoff program about dementia and just everything that you're doing, you know, for that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it's, again, shifting that stigma and bringing it into the norm that, you know, granted, dementia is not normal aging, but it is the norm for many families nowadays
yes.
that they're
yes.
dealing with. And so yes. we have to look at it in that light, and we have to
yes.
have these conversations in order to support people. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to ask you also, Mary Margaret, was in terms of your caring, you know, for your husband and others as well. Is there anything in particular you do to bring to the forefront? Is that person safe, happy, and pain-free?
That's not my number one priority. That's just a given for every day.
Mm-hmm.
Ken is pretty independent, but he's also honest. Mm-hmm. So we've been dealing with some AFib issues lately. And so that's been another situation where I have to be just aware of his needs at any particular moment. It could be in the middle of the night if he has an AFib attack, and that's been happening more often. But I feel comfortable in our relationship and in our communication. And I feel that we're pretty honest with one another, even though he's Danish. He can't. What?
Yeah.
Half Danish. That's true. Oh, dear. I'm Scandinavian too, so what can I say? I think I've surpassed most of my inhibitions as a Swedish Norwegian.
And is there anything that you would like to say to, you know, care partners out there in terms of how you want to be treated, how you'd like to see things change?
Well, how would we change things for other care partners, or how can things? I think it's important. I hope that as care partners, oh gosh, if we could only have every care partner take our class, Becky. What is it?
Powerful tools.
Powerful tools. I've taken it 3 times. So that's a wonderful, wonderful class. I just recently took it with Becky. And I hadn't taken it for several years, which is another reason why I came by here, because I thought, I think it's time that I take that again. Because I've been a care partner for more than 15 years, because even before Ken was diagnosed, we were caring for one another. So, I think I would hope that when people get a diagnosis, it used to be that they would go into their homes, close the door, pull down the shades, and stay invisible. And I think the more we can honor ourselves, our loved ones, and the fact that this is a disease that we can live with for as long as it is doable. Let's just take advantage of life during that period of time and love one another and be there for one another. And I think the more we open our arms, others will too.
Well, I think you are all are great examples of living graciously alongside dementia and, you know, walking in the light with it instead of the darkness and showing people that can still live well. Well might be defined a little differently than what it was in prior years, but that doesn't mean it's any less effective. Jennifer, anything that you want to wrap up with that we haven't covered at all?
Really, I want to thank you so much for just providing this platform for people to share, which you do so well. Your website is just full of personal stories, and it's so rich just looking through and watching videos and all the information. This is just fantastic to have this opportunity. As you mentioned, a lot of people don't talk about it. And I was thinking about last year, Leaf had her 90th birthday, and she talked about her dementia at the party. There were over 50 people there. And, you know, the bravery of folks who are willing to talk about their experience as a caregiver or someone who does have some memory loss and just put it out there. As you said, Mary Margaret, it impacts so many people's lives, and to not talk about it is doing a disservice to others who are going through it and thinking they're alone and not sure what to do. So I just want to thank everybody for that. And Lori for giving us this opportunity to talk a little bit more today.
Thank you. Well, and for Leif and Ken, I mean, you're changing the stigma of what dementia looks like, you know, by being on the show, by sharing your story with friends and family and strangers, because we've been fed a negative stigma for many, many years. You know, there's still a lot of people out there that think dementia is end stage, can't talk, you're in a wheelchair, you're drooling, you're in a nursing home, and it's dark, dingy, and gloomy. And that is not the scenario for the majority of people living with dementia right now. There's a lot of life to be had, and we never know, as Ken is a perfect example of, how it's going to progress. You know, 14 years, and they're still like, can't figure out what, you know, with all the biomarkers and things that he has, how he's doing so well. And it's like, be grateful you're doing so well. And the scientists will figure it out sooner or later, but you don't need that answer to live well today. Same with Leaf. You're living well today with dementia, and you're doing that through the help of Becky and Jennifer and the Normandale Center for Healing and Wholeness and so many other organizations that are out there supporting you. And I think it's each and every one of our jobs to share the information that we have, share the support services that are out there, because people need more than one typically. You know, you have to find that right fit and that right niche. And as your journey changes, that may change. But in sharing those opportunities, we are also making it much more comfortable to have a conversation and for more people to join the conversation, which to me, again, is critically important. Becky, anything else you wanted to add?
I think we've covered so much. It's important for people to seek out that help, to hear this, that they're not alone, and that there's such great people out there living with it, and they want to support each other. And that's so evident in the support group. So yeah, to not be afraid to seek out that help, because it really will enrich their lives.
And support groups, I know I always used to look at when I was on the journey, I looked at it as one more thing I had to do for my mom. I never thought it would help me. I mean, I just, that was not in my head. Mm-hmm. And I was so task oriented back in the time of all my to-dos. It's like, I couldn't add it. And when I got there really by mistake, going to hear a friend talk, and then he got sick and didn't show up, I was shocked. And I'm like, I'm coming back. I mean, I couldn't believe how wonderful it was to find people that understood and people that weren't embarrassed of it. You know, you didn't have to you didn't have to be on guard at all with them. You know, you could just be your honest, authentic self and learn so much and share so much. And that's the beauty of us becoming more dementia friendly and more people stepping into this space is getting rid of the fear and bringing in the hope. So as always, you know, I want to thank our panel. And I also want to thank our audience for listening. And I really, like always, encourage you to like, click, and share, not because I'm chasing numbers. I'm never going to be a Kardashian, nor do I want to be, but I want to spread the word that there is hope. So be a giver of hope, like, click, and share. Get this information out to your sphere of influence. And even if you're not in Minnesota, there might be somebody in your sphere who is looking for resources in Minnesota, or maybe it's an organization, you know, on the other side of the world that might pick up something that they're doing here that could be duplicated there. You know, that's how we become better, is by sharing and lifting hearts. So again, take those few seconds, costs little time and no money to do. And again, you can always reach out to the Normandale Center at just www.normandalecenter.org, or email them at info@normandalecenter.org. You can also reach them by phone at 952-929-1698. They are also on LinkedIn and Facebook. So no excuse not to find them. They are out there and they're just waiting to talk to you and to support you any way you can. So thanks, everybody. Have a blessed week, and we will talk soon. Bye now.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Suzanne Newman, host of the Answers for Elders podcast and radio show. We are the North Star that guides you through the complicated journey of senior care with trusted experts in money, law, living solutions, and more. So join us on this station, your favorite podcast channel, or just go to answersforelders.com. Meet the way showers who will help your journey go a lot easier.